The sound of where we live.
Brigitte Tetter.
BBC. On BBC Local Radio.
Good evening. 9 days then, officially into a brand new year. How has the first full week of January 2021 been like?
And of course,
for loads
you.
Of great people dropping in too. Tonight, we'll hear about the first black British circus owner who went on to inspire a Beatles tune.
When we think of the circus, it is still very much a white dominated profession. Because we see it as that now, we don't look back and recognise how many ethnic minority performers there were.
Steve Ward has been on a journey to uncover the stories of many black and ethnic minority performers appearing in the Victorian circus, and he'll be sharing a little bit more on the show. Bambi musician
on BBC Local Radio.
So before we go tonight, a bit of a history lesson. We're going to hear more about the first black British circus owner who actually went on to inspire a Beatles tune. So if you're wondering what time in history we're focusing in on, think 1834, when slavery had only just been abolished in England. However, Pablo Frank managed to own his own circus. Now, I mention this because Steve Ward has been on a journey to uncover the stories of many black and ethnic minority performers who actually appeared, earned money, and were huge draws in the Victorian circus. Well, he's been telling me more.
When you got to the sort of mid-19th century, slavery had been abolished in 1833, although there was still a clandestine trade going on in the background, it left the Victorians in a bit of a quandary, because some of them felt guilty about the previous slave trade. Some had a very avuncular attitude towards black and ethnic people. Some were generally interested, although they may have objectified them slightly, but they had this general interest in the culture. And then there was another deep-rooted endemic xenophobia that just totally hated and disliked anything that was different, whether it be black, minority ethnic, German, European. There was this deep-rooted xenophobia. So it was a mishmash of ideas. And out of all this, Britain was trying to find it was framing its own colonial narrative. And this led to this sort of development of an ethnic hierarchy, where you had white Anglo-Saxon at the very peak, and it went down through all a range of colours, down to sub-Saharan African, which was black, and even below them were Australian Aborigines. And in this mix, the circus was still growing and developing, and it had an inclusive element to it, an accepting element to it, that allowed black and ethnic performers to actually find a niche for themselves and become accepted for what they did rather than who they were. So the skills were acknowledged rather than necessarily, oh, look at that black person on the trapeze.
Because that's what I was going to ask you, because we're talking about a period of time, the technical abolition of slavery has happened, yet we know that there are lots of structures that kept those ethnic minorities, those people from of other colours at the kind of fringes of society. But how were they then regarded in terms of the circus? Were they seen as slaves, lower? How was that kind of community built?
I don't think there were. Certainly, there's no evidence that they were considered as slaves. Although within the circus itself, there is a social pecking order. So I can quite imagine that a lowly groom or a stagehand, for want of a better word, would be treated less well than a performer. So within that own social pecking order. But in terms of the sort of general populace, no, they were not treated as slaves. They were very, and some of them became household names and were widely accepted and praised. They were always going to be an element of the exotic. As I'll mention it in a moment, because the circus itself has an otherness to it, an exoticism to it. It in itself, it's on the fringe of society. So people went to the circus, yes, to be entertained, and yes, to observe and to experience something new, something different, and this exotic element in having, whether it be a black performer or an Asian performer or a Native American Indian performer, there was this fascination with the otherness.
I wonder if we can get to know some of the performers you've uncovered in the book. And as you mentioned, they're from varied backgrounds. But in particular, I guess we're interested in those from African and Caribbean heritage. Who did you discover?
Sure. One of the most exotic of the disciplines within the circus at that time were those people who worked with big cats, lions, tigers, etc. And certainly my researches, a character called Martini Makomo, as far as I can ascertain, he's the first black lion tamer ever referred to. And he made an appearance in 1853, working with Hilton's Menagerie. And how do we know this? Well, I found a newspaper entry for him at that date, where a young boy who was visiting the menagerie had taken a needle or some other metal instrument and stuffed it into the nose of a lion, which wasn't very happy about that. So Makomo, not realizing this, went into the cage to do his performance and was faced with this rather disgruntled lion. And he quite happily went up to the lion and withdrew the offending item. And then continue with his performance. And that's the first reference we have as Makomo being referred to as a black lion tamer. Where he came from is interesting because depending which sources you go to, in one census return, he's labeled as being born in Angola. Another account has him from Sierra Leone. And yet another one has suggested he may have actually come from the West Indies. So it's a bit complicated. I'd suspect, my own feeling is, he was probably came from the African continent rather than the West Indian. And he's recounted as to have arrived in the UK as a mariner, as a sailor. And he turned up at a menagerie, at Hilton's Menagerie, and basically said, give us a job. You know, I want to work with the lions. And they sort of put him in the lion's cage, and he obviously did a good job. And hence he became a lion tamer from that point on. And he became very, very famous in what he did. And it was a dangerous thing to do. I mean, he was mauled a couple of times. His arms were bitten by lions and tigers. I think he lost a couple of fingers or fingertips in one incident. He was even bitten badly by a camel in one of the menageries. He was reputedly a very mild-mannered man who was totally fearless in the lion's cage. And 2021 marks the 150th year since his death. He died in 1871. And he was only in his 30s at that time. He died very young. But he died of an illness, not of working with the lions.
Goodness me. It's interesting to hear as well, as you said, that he was incredibly famous, because these are the stories we don't hear through history, that there were people of colour who had that level of fame.
Absolutely. And this is one of the motivations for writing the book, because these people are just glossed over. When we think of the circus, it is still very much a white dominated profession. And because we see it as that now, we don't look back and recognize how many ethnic minority performers there were of black and Asian and Japanese and Chinese. There was a whole range of them who were performing at various levels. Some of them became household names, like Makomo. And the name Makomo itself, once Martini Makomo had died, another young Makomo appears on the scene. The name is perpetuated, and they are still black lion tamers. And there were others. Ali Kamusa Sagano is one that crops up. He was another African, and he had several incarnations. That name appears several times. And even into the 1900s, Makomo was still being used by a black lion tamer called Albert May, who came from the West Indies. And all of these are just shunted to the edges of history. And they need to be recognized. They need to be acknowledged.
Well, Steve Ward's new book is called Artists of Colour, Ethnic Diversity and Representation in the Victorian Circus. And you can pre-order your book, which is out next month, at modernvaudevillepress.com.